WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is Kay Sawyer Paul, one of my cohorts at Fair to Flare, and also of the Footnotes of Wrestling. How are you doing today?
I'm good. You're so peppy.
Well, you know, I got some energy. You know, I'm excited, you know, talking some WrestleMania. You know, we're about halfway through our series on doing 26 podcasts for 26 days for 26 WrestleMania final matches. And today we're doing WrestleMania 13, Undertaker against Sid. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, the excitement level is not exactly reflective of the quality of the match, but it's still, I think it's an interesting match to talk about. Just really interesting time in WWE's history, very much a transitional time. So,
oh, you could say that.
Yeah. So yeah, we talked a little bit, you know, we did the podcast.
Oh, you're going to make me eat my words. You're going to, okay.
Okay, well, we did the podcast. We might as well just go, just, you know, do it now.
Yeah. Okay, so if you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to the WrestleMania 8 recap that Jason and I did, where at the end of it, I say that the WrestleMania 13 main event is awesome, and I will fight him to the death to defend that. And then the problem is that one's memory of wrestling can sometimes be hazy, especially when you haven't seen a match in a very, very long time. I think the last time I had seen WrestleMania 13, I was maybe 16 years old. That's a long time for a 20-minute piece of footage to get stuck in the back of your head and totally get blown over by other stuff that is much better. So I went and rewatched it in preparation for this podcast, and I'm going to take back what I said about it being in any way a good experience, because it's not. Because unlike WrestleMania 12 and WrestleMania 14, this was not in any way a climatic or important or memorable or even well-produced piece of television. It was, in many ways, an indicative symptom of what was wrong with WWE at the time, because so much was. And they would begin to fix it not soon after this, but this was the biggest piece of proof that WWE had no idea what it was doing against WCW in 1997.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. And
like, people go back and they say that like Sting and Hogan at Starrcade was the beginning of the end of WCW. But those people have not seen Undertaker versus Sid.
Or they don't remember how bad it was. Yeah, yeah. I would say it's fair to say. I mean, even though that match, that Sting Hogan match, is pretty bad, I think this probably was worse. And I do, you know, this match is, you know, it is more than 20 minutes long, and I think it could have been an okay 10 to 12 minute match, because there are actually sequences that are not too bad. And I, you know, Sid's limitations in particular are hidden okay, at least. Like, Undertaker actually does an okay job of keeping certain parts of it together, but it's definitely not good. It actually was slightly better than I remembered it being, but only, I mean, my thought is that it was the worst WrestleMania main event of all time, and I still think I believe that. But I want to get into sort of how they got here a little bit, because I think, you know, that's interesting about as far as the direction goes, because some of that was under their control and some of it was not.
Mm.
The initial plan, my understanding is that it was supposed to be Shawn Michaels against Bret Hart. Shawn Michaels defending the title against Bret Hart. Michaels had, of course, become champion at WrestleMania 12 and then lost it to Sid at Survivor Series 96, and then regained it at the Royal Rumble and like a big stadium show in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and it's leading to the point where you're looking like you're, you know, you know, where you're going to go in that direction. And then suddenly Shawn Michaels, for, you know, for whatever reason, decides he has a serious knee injury and has to forfeit the belt and is also.
I think it's very important that you stress the verb in that sentence. He decides he has an injury.
Yes. and then he gives the famous speech where he loses his smile.
Yeah.
So the title is put up in a four-way at the February pay-per-view, which I think Final Four. It was an In Your House show, and it was basically the Final Four of the Royal Rumble, Austin, Bret, Vader, and The Undertaker.
And they did this partially because the Royal Rumble was so bungled too, right?
Yeah, because Bret had won the Royal Rumble, but the but then Austin came in and threw him out because the refs had missed the Austin elimination. So Austin was the official winner of the Royal Rumble, and then they decided.
Oh man, it was just such a string of poorly booked shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think the Royal Rumble thing would have been okay if it hadn't have been also for, like, if it hadn't been like one or the other would have been okay, but not both, I guess is the idea. But anyway, and then the other weird thing is, of course, Bret wins the title, and it's this match is actually a pretty good match, that four way, and it's Royal Rumble rules. So everyone, I think it's you can go over the top or you can be pinned or submitted, but all of them come.
It was so stupid.
Right. Then the night after that, they have a Sid Bret Hart match in which Sid ends up beating Bret Hart, I believe, due to Austin's interference. So basically, after all this, we're just kind of back to Sid again, and very shenanigans set up Sid and Undertaker and Bret versus Austin, the most famous of which is a cage match in which Bret is cost the title again against Sid. I think Austin slamming the door in his face or what have you. But,
and that's where you get the speech from Bret about being screwed. That's the first time he mentions it. And history sort of forgets that because WWE would like us to think that Bret went into the match as a good guy and Austin went into the match as a bad guy and they switched during the match, but really seeds had been sown quite a bit.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But it's funny because Bret and Austin was so good, but it shouldn't have happened, right?
Right.
And it's one of those things where it's like all of this confusion and poor writing led to Bret and Austin. So you think, well, at least it was all worth it for that. But you forget that Bret and Austin was not the only match on the show. And it also led to a bunch of other stuff that was, oh, so bad. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, in exchange for the legendary, timeless, one of the greatest matches of all time in Bret and Austin, we had to pay for it with this.
Yeah. But I still would say, I would say in the balance, I think Bret and Austin is good enough to make up for this. This is pretty bad. No question about it. this was kind of sort of the period where I'm starting to watch more and more wrestling, where I'm kind of coming back somewhere in 96 through 97, kind of about a year where I'm watching just here or there, just a little bit. And then I'd be really get hardcore in mid 97 again. And this is very much an era where one of my complaints at the time, is that it's very hard to find someone who I can like, who is like a likable, like, hero. Like, it seems like all the characters, like, you know, even Undertaker, Sid, Austin, Michaels, and Bret, like, not necessarily like right at this point, but at some time during this point, all of them are murky in a sense. Like, you know, like they have good qualities, they have bad qualities. And I know that's kind of like the whole Shades of Grey thing that they were trying to go for, but and I think there were that got really interesting later during the US Canada stuff. But especially right here, like it's like I said, it, you know, it's hard for me. Like it was hard for me as a fan at the time to like find someone like I really wanted to root for, and that was important to me at the time. It's not really important to me now as a, you know, older and more of a fan of the art of wrestling as opposed to like, you know, finding someone to cheer and boo. But at the time, it was hard for me to make that emotional connection to anyone. I mean, Brett had been one of my favorites, and obviously, you know, he was kind of teasing the heel thing here, and you know, and I stayed kind of, you know, with him even through that. But
it was easy to stay with Brett because if you liked Brett for what he said before he turned bad guy, you could still like him for what he said as a bad guy.
Yes, and then
his tone never changed. It was the world around him that changed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Austin, you know, I got into as I kind of got the character and as I kind of got more into the flow of the show and kind of understood the changes and everything. But there's something to be said for, you know, when you try to kind of, you know, make your characters almost, you know, when you're adding complexity and depth to the characters, you do it, that also kind of makes it harder for like a person who's not like really seriously invested in the show to kind of connect with those characters, because it's hard to understand the motivations unless you're really paying attention and really closely watching.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So with that, do we want to start the recap by trying to explain why Bret Hart shows up?
Well, I think we should mention first is that Shawn Michaels comes down during beforehand and does commentary.
If we have to.
Well, that's fairly important because we have on commentary Vince McMahon, Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, and Shawn Michaels, all four of them in this match. And Shawn Michaels, this is during his peak of like trying to be cute and obnoxious, a lot like John Cena sometimes does, actually, today. And very much annoys me in commentary with a lot of
Cena has never shown this kind of teeth, though. Like a lot of Shawn's barbs throughout the whole thing are pretty venomous.
Yeah, especially and obviously when Brett comes out, I mean Michael's already, you know, immediately he starts talking about like how Brett's an egomaniac, and it's definitely and it's not necessarily stuff that like completely fit into like the on-camera character, even though Brett had just finished his heel turn, you know, a couple hours before. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely stuff where, you know, I don't think the average person would have understood the grudge the two of them had, and it was definitely more insidery type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Which is never pretty when it comes out like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think, you know, Shawn doesn't come off very well here unless you really like Shawn, I guess. And yeah, basically Brett comes out and then he does run down all three, Shawn, Undertaker, and Sid, you know, basically accuses Shawn of faking the injury, which is true, complains about Undertaker having got involved in that cage match. In fact, now that I recall, it was Undertaker who slammed the door in his face and not Austin, although Austin helped keep him from winning the title too. So the idea being that, you know, that Undertaker had slammed the door in their friendship was the quote, which Shawn was baffled by the idea that Brett could ever have any friends. And I forget exactly what he says about Sid, but not really important. Basically the gist of it, that Sid of all people ends up powerbombing him and throwing him out of the ring to basically start the match, which is weird because Sid is mostly the heel here and Undertaker is mostly the babyface, yet it's...
Well, I think it's important, and we should maybe do this for this podcast, is to just get rid of those terms because they do not apply at this point in time in WWE.
That's fair. I mean, well, Undertaker is basically the closest to a...
But I think you're right. I think there's nothing to grasp on here in terms of heroics. Nobody acts well, right? No, nobody is upstanding at all. Everybody is cheap-shotting everybody.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's almost like it's almost like in sports when athletes like, you know, like complain, like when you feel like you're watching a sporting event and all like everyone's complaining like to the refs or whatever or to the sport you're watching, and it's sort of like, I don't really want to watch these guys complain. You know, these guys seem totally unlikable, even if what they're doing is sort of legitimate. It comes off poorly to an average person.
Absolutely, it's a vanity fair, and nobody likes that.
Yeah, yeah. So they do Sid then ends up like talking for a while and running down Brett, and then they finally Undertaker finally goes after him, and then the match finally starts. So Undertaker, I will say that he does try his best to kind of make something about this, as far as he does a lot of getting tossed around, you know, does some pretty big bumps. I mean, certainly makes an effort to make Sid look like a tough guy, but Sid, his offense is really so poor, and so other than his power bomb and maybe his choke slam, nothing that Sid really looks very good. So it's sort of hard to make that offense look great, even though you've got a 6'8", 325-pound guy doing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean Sid was all looks and no almost nothing else. So
theme music, is he a good theme music?
I don't know. I always thought it was a little cheesy, actually.
Hmm.
So, well, no, I take that back. I thought the psycho noise at the beginning was a little cheesy. The actual theme was pretty good. You're right. I take that back. So,
but I'm not going to argue with you quality wise. Like both, even the Undertaker at this point was not the performer he would become.
Yeah, he had definitely improved over 96 and into this year. I mean, he was definitely better than he'd been, and I think a lot of that was more of just a change in style more than anything, just kind of being more like realistic as opposed to the supernatural thing all the time. But yeah, this wasn't, it's not a good match. There's not really like, they do some brawling and outside, and it kind of meanders. It doesn't really go anywhere too much. There's definitely a it doesn't have like the intensity and like the punch that you would expect of a WrestleMania main event, which most of them had been really, really excellent up until then, or at least good and energetic, if not great, And this one just kind of, there's a lot of stalling, a lot of meandering, a lot of like kind of going nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember what you are following is not the last 11 months of main events. What you're following is an Iron Man match, right? In the chronologically, the next match after 63 minutes of Brett and Shawn is this.
Yeah.
And there's, it pales in comparison. It pales in context. It pales out of context. It's a weak, weak match.
Yeah. Yeah. And the crowd is very flat, too, and there's a lot of, Undertaker works a long nerve pinch. Sid works a long camel clutch. I mean, there's a lot of, I think it's like almost like a 3-minute bear hug. Sid releases it a few times, but it really is like, it's kind of harkens back to some of those really slow, plodding big man versus big man matches of the, mid to late 80s. And,
yeah.
And the style had clearly evolved at this point. I mean, people were used to main events with Brett and Shawn Michaels, and mostly having great matches. So you move back to this, it's just like,
And even during the evening, what you've got is, even take away Brett and Shawn. Or sorry, Brett and Austin, which is such a technological leap forward for professional wrestling that night. Even take that match away, you've got faster paced, more interesting, more athletic, younger, better guys on the roster than this, right? But even in your main event scene, you've got Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin, Bret Hart.
Yeah,
and even throw in the Undertaker, because if you throw him against those three guys, you're generally going to have a good match. Mm-hmm. And you've got those four great, great performers.
Yeah.
Some of the best ever.
Plus you have Mankind, you have Vader.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
you,
totally.
And you have David Boy Smith, who had
been
in 96.
And they were all on the show.
Yeah.
But not in the main event.
And Owen too. So yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a really weird random choice, and I think people we're still trying to get something out of Sid, even though it kind of seemed apparent at this point that no one was going to get, you know, Sid was, you know, like we said, all looks but nothing else, and was not going to be a guy who could carry you. And, you know, I mean, I get going with Undertaker in a sense, because he'd been around for a long time, and it's sort of like, you know, okay, well, we're going to, you know, we're going to try him as champion just because we haven't really tried centering the company around him. And they, you know, that was kind of what they sort of did through mid 97, although really the Hart Foundation and, you know, and Austin feud was really what, you know, kind of carried WWE through that period. And then later, of course, DX. Yeah, it's just, it's definitely not a, you know, there's not really like a whole lot of action to like even like get into, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do some of the typical big man stuff, like they do a double big boot, which actually was done pretty well. You know, Sid actually goes a little bit aerial. He hits sort of an axe handle off the top.
I cannot watch Sid Vicious get up on the top rope.
Well, yeah, of course, you know what happened later with that. And he actually goes up again, hits sort of
Oh,
like
God, should we clarify that for people who might not know?
Oh, okay, that's a good point. At WCW pay-per-view in 2001, January 2001.
Their third last pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think it was called Sin, but don't hold me to that.
Yeah, it was Sin.
Okay, yep. I've actually never, well, I've never really seen it.
Dude, I watched it live.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't watching it live, and I don't think I've really ever seen a replay of it. But basically,
it was horrific.
Yeah. Sid jumps off either the top, probably the second rope. He jumps off the top and he tries to sort of like do like a big boot off the top, I guess.
Yeah.
And the other leg, well, you've seen it, so you probably could describe it better than I could.
He lands on his other leg, and instead of holding his weight, like you'd think it would, the bottom half of his leg snaps in half.
Yeah.
And it goes straight down, and it's all on camera. And it was the most horrific thing I've ever seen mid-match.
Yeah.
Just the worst. And so every single time I ever see Sid Vicious get up or try to do anything with both feet off the floor, I twinge. And I'm so glad that he's finally like okay and healed up and fine, but that took a long time and was just awful.
Right.
And just what a terrible accident.
Yeah. Yeah. So he does the third time he goes off the top, he gets caught by the Undertaker, although Sid gets an eye rake real quick and then goes up again. Actually, he stays up. He goes all the way to the top rope this time, and then Taker does the big zombie sit up and then crotches him on the ropes, which gives allows Lawler to crack a nuts joke of all things.
Get it in somewhere.
Yeah, and then Undertaker body slams him off the top and hits the top rope clothesline, which motions for the tombstone. But Sid's actually one of the cool parts of the match, kind of the only cool part, is Sid actually is able to reverse into his own tombstone, and then he actually does like he folds his arms and does like the Undertaker style cover, but then Undertaker kicks out at two. So mm-hmm. Kind of later, or not long afterward, they end up outside of the ring, and then Brett runs in and then hits Sid with a couple of chair shots, and Undertaker slams Sid into the post and back in. He choke slams him for two, and Sid he is able to avoid the flying clothesline, although it was very awkward looking as he did that, which was not the only thing that was awkward looking here. And he tries the power bomb, and then Brett runs atop the apron again for the third time, gets involved.
To which Sean cries, "Doesn't this guy get sick of getting beat up?" Even though Brett's not the one getting beat up.
Yes.
And I have a question. Why is Brett helping the Undertaker?
Yeah, I don't.
Isn't Brett a bad guy now?
I think he's not really helping the Undertaker. He's more hurting Sid because Sid powerbombed him to begin with, I guess, is the gist of it.
I mean, this is you're absolutely right. There was no clear division of right and wrong here, and while they would eventually learn to make that work in their favor, they didn't know what they were playing with here.
Yeah.
Right? I think they were playing with elements of gray-shaded noir characters who were out for their own agendas and had no sense of clear good guy, bad guy. But they didn't know how to do that yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can do, yeah, you can do a layered, you know, complex, you know, character with different motivations and character that, you know, may be heelish to some or babyface to the other, depending on your point of view. But yeah, they weren't doing it well at this point, you know. Mm-hmm. They were doing it pretty well with Brett, I guess, but everyone, no one else where they were doing
it. But not
it
even
well.
At this point, because Brett didn't have a real, Brett would get a motivation within a couple of weeks, and it would make a lot of sense. But at the time, Brett didn't have any real reason for his actions.
Well, he did sort of have the whole, like, events are conspiring against me. I've been this great guy, and yet I keep getting screwed. And, you know, and okay, now I'm out for myself, kind of thing. So there was that, but it wasn't really clicking at this point. It had been the Austin, you know, the Austin Hart match was really, you know, the capper, and then it flowed. I mean, it was basically like. Basically, it was like the end, and they were going, and he was now falling down the waterfall, and now you know he's in the bottom of the river, and now everything's flowing. That's my awkward metaphor for that. So,
we'll take it.
And anyway, when Brett runs atop the apron again, he manages to clothesline Sid, or basically hang Sid's neck on the ropes, and then Sid runs right into the tombstone, and then that basically is the. The end of it. So yeah, a little bit of an awkward finish, although it did get a pretty big reaction for, I guess everyone was glad that it was finally over, if nothing
else. Yeah, that was a thank God it's over clap, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but I think people were excited to see Undertaker win the title. I think the belt mattered enough, Undertaker was popular enough that I think people were excited to see that. But, you know, I think they would have rather have seen it in a much shorter and, you know. Yeah, you know, like I said, there were sequences that were pretty good, or at least, you know, okay, you know, tolerable anyway. And I, like I said, if it had been more of a 10-minute match, and I don't think all the Brett shenanigans, even though I did sort of further establish him, it kind of cement him being like, you know, a mean guy, but it really was pretty unnecessary. It kind of just kind of distracted from things more than anything. So yeah, it was not good. We can agree on this, so.
Certainly.
Yeah. So, and it's okay to be wrong once in a while. I mean, you know, no one likes a know-it-all, so.
Dude, I'm wrong all the time.
Me too, so, you know.
You know, 2 weeks ago I predicted that Miz would be defending against Brady at WrestleMania. I'm wrong all the time.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, That one I could have probably told you that was not going to happen, but that's
well,
okay.
You weren't there, were you?
I was not there. No, I was not there to help you out. But yeah. So anything else or should we just move along and pretend that we never saw this?
Oh God, I wish.
Yeah, you know, for me, sometimes watching bad wrestling can be almost as enjoyable as watching good wrestling, but this is not an example of that.
No, it is certainly not.
Yeah.
It is certainly not. Yeah, if you want an example of bad wrestling coming out of WrestleMania 13, watch the match in between Bret and Austin and the main event, the Pier 6 Brawl.
Okay. See, I...
It's a bad match, but it's a very enjoyable bad match.
Yeah. I'm not even sure. Like, I'd have to watch that again to see – to really see if it's a bad match. And given who's in it, you're probably right. But at the time, I remember it being so fun that I would have considered a good match. So it'll – you know, it's definitely a garbage match. It's definitely a brawl. But and the match we're talking about, for those who don't know, is the it was the Road Warriors and Ahmed Johnson against the Nation of Domination, which I think was Farouk – and Crush and Savio Vega, if I'm not mistaken. So, watch that match. Watch Bret and Austin. If you're listening to this, you've probably seen Bret and Austin, but watch it again because it's awesome. It's maybe the greatest match in WrestleMania history. Don't watch this because it's not good. Listen to the podcast and listen to our advice, and you really don't need to watch this. So. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. And, of course, we'll be back with WrestleMania 14 tomorrow. And we'll be continuing as a countdown until WrestleMania 27 with every final match in WrestleMania history. So thanks again and goodbye.